ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Sri Krishna instructs us, Ye yathamam prapadyante yatham sthithai bhavajamyaham mama bharat manu bharatante manusya bharat sarvasa. That as you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is within the heart of all of us. He also describes Sarvasya Chaham Hridisha Nivishto Matasmitir Jnana Bhapohanam Cha, that as the Lord seated within the core of our heart, He is the source of our remembrance, our knowledge, and our forgetfulness. In fact, He reciprocates with us exactly according to our desire in life. Therefore, in essence, the path of yoga or the path of religion is the process taught by the Lord and His great servitors, by which we can learn how to properly approach God. How to approach Him with the proper desire. You see, in this world, the tendency is to become very spiritually complacent, especially when our material necessities are very nicely provided. Because factually, almost everyone is more or less completely materialistic. Even though we may have some religion in our life, when it comes down to where our energy is directed, it's more or less with the motive of providing the necessities and the pleasures of our senses and the senses of those who are near and dear to us. And therefore, when the necessities of life, the pleasures of life, are being very nicely provided, then there really is not so much need to ask much of God. We will casually request Him to give us liberation at the time of death and to protect the situation that we have in this world. But there is not much intensity in our prayer to the Lord. Therefore, knowing this tendency to be so deeply rooted within our conditioned consciousness, the Lord creates oftentimes very, very difficult tests for the aspiring devotees. And the purpose of these tests is to give the devotee the chance to cry out in helpless dependence for God's mercy. Sometimes when a devotee is in a predicament, someone may ask, why is God allowing that to happen to His devotee? The answer is because He is very kind to His devotee. You see, the greatest obstacle in our spiritual life is false pride. And everyone is a victim of false pride. Everyone is thinking, Prakrite kriyamanini gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. That I am the doer of my activities. Just see what I have done. Just see what I am doing, and wait and see what I will do. Literally, everyone is a victim of this way of thinking. And when everything is going our way, we consider that we have everything very nicely under control. And therefore, what is the need of God? We may do our puja, we may chant our mantras, but for all practical purposes, what really is the need of God? By my good efforts, by my intelligence, everything is going on just according to plan. This consciousness is the worst enemy to one who wants to chant the name of God properly. When we chant the holy names of the Lord, we must understand that it is the quality in which we chant which will be the cause of the result of our chanting. Some people chant mantras so many times every day for so many years, and they wonder why I am not feeling the divine presence of God. Because this process is not mechanical. In the process of bhakti, nothing is mechanical. Recently, we approached one very great sadhu, and we were discussing formalities in the Vaishnava tradition. And he was explaining, in the Vaishnava tradition, there are no formalities. Every single relationship and every way we deal with every single person is not a formality. It is an expression of love. It is a means of purification. Someone asks, is the relation of the Diksha Guru or the Sannyas Guru more important? Or is one just a formality? He said, what is this formality? There are no questions of formalities. Every relationship that we have and every way we deal with every individual is based on love and respect and service. You see, the path of bhakti casts out all empty formalities and all superficial mechanical processes. Everything we do, every dealing we have, is meant to be done in an attitude of service, devotion, and sacrifice. And of all of the principles in the process of bhakti, there is nothing more emphasized, nothing more essential for our spiritual purification than the chanting of the holy names of God. So how much we must guard against taking the chanting of the holy names as a formality or as a mechanical process. When we chant the name of God, we are petitioning the Lord, who is none different than his name, to reciprocate with us by showering us with his mercy. And he will reciprocate exactly according to the feeling in which we are chanting, to the sincerity in which we call out his name. Therefore, the Lord describes to Maharaj Yudhisthira, Yasyaham anagrinami harishyeta dhanam shanai. Sometimes I purposely put my devotees in difficult situations so that my devotee has no one else and nothing else to turn to except me. And in such a state of consciousness, he cries out my holy name with very, very high quality of feeling. Today, many of you perhaps have witnessed on the Mahabharata series the disrobing of Draupadi. And people with a philosophical mind often question, why did Krishna allow this to happen to his devotees? First of all, why Maharaj Yudhisthira, who's such a great, great king, with such integrity as an honest man, why in the world would he take part in a gambling match? After all, there are four regulative principles: no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, and no gambling. So why would he gamble? That is first question. Second is, why would Krishna allow this evil-minded Sakuni and Duryodhana to win the gambling match and take everything away? And if the Pandavas were such great heroes, such fearless devotees of the Lord, why did they sit there on the floor and say nothing and do nothing to protect their own wife, who was being stripped naked by unscrupulous personalities? These questions, they have come to your mind? First of all, let us understand that whatever the Lord does through his devotees often has many, many, many purposes to fulfill. There are external and internal reasons for all the dealings of the Lord with his devotees. First of all, Maharaj Yudhisthira was a Kshatriya. Now, today, there are no Kshatriyas. There is practically no such thing as a Kshatriya on earth anymore who has the qualities of a real Kshatriya. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes what are the qualities of a real Kshatriya. He is completely fearless. He is heroic. He is expert in combat. He is the protector of the innocent. He is chivalrous. In the days of the Vedic age, the king, when he would declare war against another military force, he would be the first one on the battlefield with a sword in his hand to fight. So you see, the king would not declare war unless it was something very important, because his life was at stake.
Therefore, he had to be very heroic and fearless. Today, what kings, what prime ministers, what presidents would even consider going anywhere near the battlefield? Huh? They usually remain thousands of miles away in a nice presidential mansion with so many security guards and secret service men all around protecting them. And they're living in a plush room with soft furniture, drinking their liquor, watching their TV, and making all sorts of political decisions. And what are those political decisions? To send the innocent youth to the battlefield, where they're being slaughtered wholesale by the enemy. And he just keeps recruiting more and more and more and more men to go to the battlefield and shed their blood. By the Vedic standard, that person is not a king. He is not a kshatriya. He is a coward. He is a low-class man who has taken the role that he does not deserve to have. But we find that the political leaders of every country in the world are like this. But in the Vedic times, when kshatriyas were kshatriyas, even the worst, most heinous demons, if they were king, they would be first in the battlefield. What to speak of the righteous? Because that was the code of a kshatriya. The code of a kshatriya was that he would never, ever, ever refuse any challenge, whatever it was. Therefore, when Maharaj Yudhisthira was challenged to a game of dice, as a kshatriya, it was his duty, he was obliged, that he could not refuse that challenge. Whether it was licit or illicit, it was a challenge that had to be accepted. So the question is, if somebody challenges us to gamble, does that mean we should gamble? Huh? Because sometimes people do like this. I bet you that this happens like this. So does that mean we should think, well, Maharaj Yudhisthira could not refuse a challenge, so neither can I? Huh? If you are a Brahmin, a Vaishya, a Sudra, or anything else, you are not allowed to gamble ever. But if you are a qualified kshatriya, then you have that right. Now, as I say, there are no kshatriyas on earth anymore of that stature. So therefore, gambling is not justified for anyone today. It is simply illicit activity. If you are willing to give your life to protect any innocent creature on earth, then you have a right to gamble like Maharaj Yudhisthira. Because Maharaj Yudhisthira was willing to give his life, risk his life, to protect any innocent creature in the kingdom, even if it be an insignificant dog, or a cow, or a low-class person. Maharaj Yudhisthira was the protector of all praja, all the citizens of his kingdom. And if even the most insignificant personality came to him with a problem, he took it as his life and soul to solve the problem of that person, even if it meant risking his life. If we have that quality, then we can know that we are a kshatriya who must accept all challenge. So therefore, for Maharaj Yudhisthira, there was absolutely nothing illicit about accepting gambling. it would have been illicit for him to refuse, because it would have been below his integrity as a Kshatriya to refuse any challenge. Second of all, Krishna wanted to show how horribly dangerous gambling really is. He wanted to warn us through this episode that nobody should ever go near this process of gambling. Whoever you are, however great you are, when you come in the process of this activity, you become intoxicated and you lose your intelligence. And it is a fact. Just like in America, there is, in India too, all over the world, there is Alcoholics Anonymous. There is Drug Users Anonymous. Now, the biggest growing organization of this type in the Western world is Gamblers Anonymous. Because once you get gambling in your system, it's an addiction that impels you to gamble again and again and again. You cannot stop. It goes beyond your control. All of your rational thinking and intelligence is stolen away by this vice. And it is a fact. It is habit forming. Therefore, even such a great soul as Maharaj Yudhisthira, if he lost his intelligence due to the infatuation of gambling, what is our position? How much we must be very careful to never, ever, ever even consider. It is one of the four pillars of sinful life. Krishna also wanted to show the nobility of Maharaj Yudhisthira. How he was such a man of high honor that when he would give his word, there would be no condition possible that would divert his attention from fulfilling his promise. Today, words are so cheap. People just, their tongues are so uncontrolled. Their minds are so uncontrolled, they will just say anything, not considering the consequence or the responsibility they have for each word they speak. People are very fond of gossiping, criticizing others, not knowing what a responsibility they have and what the consequences that will come upon them for doing this. Not even knowing whether what they're saying is actually true or untrue. They speak. This is the sign of a very low-class mentality. Maharaj Yudhisthira, he would not speak anything that was not truth. He would not speak anything that was not beneficial for all persons involved. And whatever he would say, he would back up with his life. Huh? Now we say something, and if we're challenged, you say like this, then I didn't mean it like that, or I didn't actually say that. Huh? So easy. When Maharaj Yudhisthira would say something, he would back that word up with everything he had. This is called honor. Krishna describes that for a Kshatriya, to be dishonored is worse than death. Now, is this a bodily conception of life? Why are we so attached to honor? It is not simply a idea of false prestige, that to be dishonored is worse than death. But for a Kshatriya, because they had such high integrity, that whatever they would say, whatever they would do, in the service of God, if they were to back down or be dishonest in any way, shape, or form, that would be worse than death. You see, in this age of Kali Yuga, people are not very concerned with honor or truth or honesty. But Maharaj Yudhisthira, when he vowed to gamble his own life, his brother's life, his kingdom, all his possessions, all of his wealth, and even his wife, although he did it in the intoxication of gambling, still he was a man of such honor that he would not back down anything. He understood how responsible he was for everything he said. That is the conduct of a civilized man or a civilized woman. Some people may say, well, this is not a very spiritual thing. This is simply mundane morality. But this is a spiritual thing. Because unless Krishna specifically and directly tells you to say something against the codes of honesty, you have absolutely no right to tell a lie or to be dishonest in any circumstance of life without the blessings of the great souls. So Maharaj Yudhisthira taught the people of the world how to be a man of your word, even under the most difficult conditions of life. You see, it's easy to become a man of your word when everything is just the way you like it. But when it takes great sacrifice and pain to stand behind your word, it takes a man of very deep sincerity. Maharaj Yudhisthira was such a man. Krishna also wanted to show the flickering nature of everything of this world. How you could be the king of earth in 1 second, and 5 minutes later, you can have nothing. That is the situation of every one of us here today. You can be a big, big industrialist with billions of dollars. You can be a very, very expert scholar who can give wonderful discourses. You can be a very wonderful cook or housewife with all abilities to satisfy others. Whatever your situation, know that in 5 minutes you can have nothing. That is the nature of this world. Krishna, through material nature, can take away all your wealth, all of your intelligence, all of your popularity, all of your prestige, all of your abilities in a second. What he took away from Maharaj Yudhisthira, he had millions and millions of times more than any of us will ever hope to have. And he lost it all in a second. In my country, America, some years ago, just 40 years ago, there was a depression where the stock market crashed. And within 5 minutes, people who were multi-millionaires living in big palaces, 5 minutes later, they were on the streets begging for a potato with no place to sleep. Now, if that can happen in such a country as America, you don't think it can happen in a country like India? Rogues, thieves can attack at any moment. Krishna wanted to show us not to be too attached to anything. Because the flickering nature of this world, kamala dala jala jivana talamala, is it's here today and tomorrow it may be gone. So what are you going to attach yourself to? These things? Or to that which is permanent? The only thing permanent in life is our relationship with God. An intelligent man wisely invests his human energy primarily in establishing that relationship with God, knowing that all the things of this world today may be here, but tomorrow they may be gone. It is not within our control, ultimately. Perhaps the most important lesson to be learned in this condition is that in the ultimate issue, we are all completely helpless. Draupadi was a great queen. She was not an ordinary human being. By the great sacrificial ceremony of King Drupada, Draupadi was born of fire, along with her brother Dhrishtadyumna. She was the wife of the five Pandavas. It is described when the Swayamvara ceremony of Draupadi was taking place. It was specially designed so that nobody except Arjuna could possibly have her hand in marriage. What had to be done by the person to win her hand was impossible by any other warrior on earth except two people: Arjuna and Karna. And of course Bhishma, but because Bhishma was a lifelong brahmachari, everyone knew that he wouldn't be coming. So when Karna approached where there was a fish, behind a moving wheel, and you had to look down in a reflection of water and pierce the eye of the fish without looking directly. So when Karna came, everyone was very afraid. Oh my God, he could do it. So she insulted him by saying, "You are a low-class man, you are not really a kshatriya, you are not allowed to be in this competition. After all, your father is only a chariot driver. Therefore, your distinction does not qualify you." I mean, she was very, very special in her qualifications. She was meant to be the queen of earth. Now, being in such a condition, the normal person will become very proud. Just see what I have. Every woman who has a good husband is proud of her husband. Even a woman who has a terrible husband is tries to be proud of her husband. Because after all, this is all I have. In America, it's not like that. You just get a new one. But in India, you're stuck with the one you have, so you might as well be proud of him, right? And there are stories in the Vedic literatures of very, very high-class women who are very protective and proud of even men who are very fallen. Always trying to uplift them and help them. Just like Srila Prabhupada's sister. She was a very religious, very pious woman. And her husband used to go out drinking. And when people would come to her house and say, "Where is your husband?" she would know he was at the place where the alcohol was being served. And she would very proudly say, "Oh, he is at temple. He is worshiping God at the temple." And they would say, "Oh, very nice." In this way, a woman by nature is very proud of her husband. And if a woman has a good husband, my God, she becomes very proud. Just see my husband, how good he is. Now Draupadi, if you think, Matajis, you have good husband, she had 5 best husbands. Huh? If you think that, oh, my husband is a very good devotee. Her husbands were Krishna's best friends. Huh? Maharaj Yudhisthira, who was religion personified. Talk about high births. He was the son of Dharmaraj, Yamaraj, the great Mahajan. Arjuna was the son of Indra. Bhima was the son of the most powerful of all the devatas, Vayu. And Nakula and Sahadev. So here she was, the heir of the planet Earth and all of its opulences, with the greatest husbands. But she was put in a situation where she was all alone, with nothing and no one that would or could protect her. Draupadi was dragged by Dushasana into the court of the Kurus. Where there were many respectable men. Now for a woman of spiritual quality, her chastity is the most precious and cherished aspect of her life. In fact, it is said that a civilized man, this is how he evaluates a woman, by her chastity. A man of low mentality, he will evaluate a woman by her physical appearance or by her personality, how charming her personality may be. But a man of spiritual integrity, he will evaluate a woman by her devotion to God and by her chastity. It is said in the Shastra that there is no ornament that beautifies a woman more than her chastity. Our Guru Maharaj Srila Prabhupada tells the story of how when he was young, he was once with his friends in Calcutta. And there was a street sweeper woman, Bangi, by all caste distinctions, she was the lowest. She was sweeping the street. But the way she was keeping herself covered and the way she was always moving aside whenever men would come by was such a prominent exhibition of her inner chastity that she said that he said even the most sophisticated and distinguished men, when they saw her, they would offer her all respects. And Srila Prabhupada said that he and his friends, when they saw her, they offered their obeisances, seeing the quality of her chastity. Now, for a woman of such high consciousness, to lose chastity is worse than death. They would welcome death 1,000 times before losing their chastity. They would accept the tortures of hell before losing their chastity. Now, Draupadi was a woman of such quality. And Duryodhana knew this. And because he was so envious, he wanted, in front of the Pandavas, for her to give up all her chastity by force, simply to humiliate and embarrass those who he was envious of. This is the mentality of an envious person. He loves to see the suffering of others. He loves to see the degradation of others. If you are envious of someone, you cannot tolerate seeing that person glorified. You cannot tolerate hearing that person's name esteemed. But you'll do anything or everything, by hook or by crook, to somehow or other diminish the prestige of that person's good name and fame. And depending on the degree of your envy, that will determine the degree of how malicious you will be. Your degree is just some, then when you hear somebody saying, oh, this person, just see what he has done, you say, well, actually, he didn't really do it. He's not really so good after all. There's really many people so much better. And I'm one of them. I may not say it directly, but indirectly, eventually you will see. But if someone is just outright envious, like Duryodhana, he just wanted to utterly smash the most precious quality of Draupadi to pieces and make her into an untraced prostitute in front of all. You know, Duryodhana is living within the hearts of all of us. To some degree, we all have this quality. We must be very careful not to respond to this voice of envy within us. Because we see the result of what happened to Duryodhana. Because he offended great souls. He died a miserable, suffering death and became infamous for the rest of history as an envious rascal. That is the result. You lose everything when you offend great souls due to envy. It may not happen instantly. After all, Duryodhana offended the Pandavas, and for the next 14 years he was the king of earth. So one may think, well, what's so bad about offending great souls? He was the king of earth. During that 14 years, many people were probably talking like this. But it says that the mills of time, they grind slow but exceedingly fine. Whatever you deserve, you will get. Maybe not today, but in due course of time. Huh? So Duryodhana wanted to strip Draupadi naked in the assembly of great men. Now, for a woman to be undressed before anyone other than her husband is considered to be unchaste. Now, we're speaking about 5,000 years ago in Bharatvarsha. Today, this principle is not very popular. An honorable man would not even consider taking the hand of a woman in marriage who was even touched by another man. This was the way they lived. They had such a sense of honor and morality. Just like we read about Bhishma, when he wanted to get wives for Vichitravirya, and he went to the Swayamvara ceremony of Amba, Ambala, and Ambika. He kidnapped all three of them because he knew that Vichitravirya would never win their hands. And he knew he was disqualified because he didn't want any of them for his wives. So therefore, he simply went in the arena, grabbed them by the hands, put them on his chariot, defeated all the warriors, and drove off and brought them to Hastinapur. But one of the women already gave her heart to another man. And when she explained this, Vichitravirya said, "Then I cannot marry you." And Bhishma and Satyavati, they all said, "No, you cannot marry. You should go back to that other man." And when she went back to that prince who was so anxious, he came all that distance just to win her hand in marriage. And when she said, "All right, now you have me." He said, no, you are on the chariot with Bhishma. Therefore, I cannot take you anymore. You are unchaste. Yeah. This was the degree that a woman's chastity was honored. What to speak of being stripped naked before men. So understand the intensity of the condition that Draupadi was in. She had Dushasana, who was a trained military warrior, who was powerful like no man in this age can ever accomplish. He was a man that could kill hundreds of others at a time, effortlessly, in combat. And she was a queen who always had, as a princess, so many servants. Her limbs were delicate and soft. And his limbs were hard as steel. Duryodhana ordered him, strip her of her sari. So he began to pull. Draupadi was in a condition of losing the greatest thing she had. She was in so much anxiety. She was in a state of so much suffering. All she could think of is, "I must preserve my chastity." So with all of her strength, she held on to that sari. And she pulled, and he pulled. And she pulled, and he pulled. It was like a match between a fly and an elephant. She realized that all of her strength was useless. At this moment of greatest and direst need, none of her strength could help her. And all of her wealth and all of her fortune was of no avail. And even her husbands, who were the most powerful men on earth, even they could not help her. She came to the realization that she was alone, that there was nothing and no one that could help her in this moment of crisis. Do you want to know something? Whoever you are, let me tell you, at the time of death, you will be in the same predicament as Draupadi. All your prestige, all your money, all your fame, all your family members, there will be nobody there to help you at the time of death. It's just you pulling on one side and death, all devouring death, pulling on the other. And you are helpless to win. Draupadi realized in that condition of life that I am helpless. Completely. My only shelter is Krishna. Only Krishna can save me. I am 100% dependent on his mercy alone. And therefore, in total helpless desperation, first she turned to her husbands. How can you let this happen to me? Are you going to stand there and let this happen to me? And they went like this. Then she turned to Bhishma, who through marriage was her most glorious protective grandfather. Are you going to allow this to happen to me? And he looked down. This is very similar to the story of Gajendra the elephant. You know the story. He was the king of the jungle with friends, family members, wealth. But when the crocodile of death was defeating him, he looked at his family members, he looked at his kingdom, he looked at everyone, please help me. And they all stood there. What can we do? So in this condition, when Draupadi understood the reality of her position in this material world, she threw her arms in the air, which is a sign of total surrender. Which means she accepted that I am not the doer. As long as she was holding on to her sari, trying to hold by her own strength, she thought she could save herself. But when she came to full realization that she could not do anything for herself, she let go. She raised her arms to outreach, crying out for Krishna. And with a heart filled with love, filled with helpless devotion, she cried out, Hare Krishna, Hare Govinda. And Krishna is none different than his name. And according to the degree of sincerity you chant his name, he will reveal himself accordingly. Because she chanted his name in helpless devotion, in full dependence, therefore Krishna fully manifested himself right there instantly. He manifested himself within her sari to save his devotee from this embarrassing situation. And as Dushasana pulled and pulled and pulled, Krishna kept supplying. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paryupashate teshim nitya bayuktayam yogakshemam vahamyam. That for my devotee I protect what he has and preserve what he lacks. Huh? This is the perfect example of this verse. Draupadi lacked enough sari to cover her body. So Krishna carried what she lacked. And he became the sari. And as Krishna is unlimited, Ananta, so similarly, her sari, who was then an incarnation of Krishna himself, became as unlimited as God. Just as there is no end, there is no limit to the glories of God, there was no limit and no end to the extent of her sari. And the more Dushasana pulled, the more her sari grew. And it grew and grew until practically the whole room was filled with sari. And Dushasana was so exhausted that he had to surrender to Krishna. Factually, at the time of death, Krishna describes, Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajyante kalevaram. Antikala chamevam smaran matva kalevaram. That one who remembers me alone at the time of death, he attains me. Death can come today. There is no guarantee. Just a few days ago, we were going to Vrindavan from Delhi. We were driving in a car. And there was a roadblock. Some policemen stopped us. And a car, somehow or other, why and how it happened, we do not know, but it swerved off head-on into a bus. The car was smashed, and the dead body of the person in the car was laying there. And the police stopped us just inches away from the car, and they couldn't get this person's body out of the car. So unavoidably, we looked. We had to see his dead corpse laying there, who 5 minutes before was on his way to a destination, just doing his ordinary daily activities. And we were thinking, my God, he was probably the least person on earth to expect that he would die today. But he died. So similarly, we are also the least people on earth expecting that we are going to die today. But how do we know? So we were all reflecting in the car like this. And 5 minutes later, all of a sudden, somebody came right before us, and we started to swerve off the road, and a bus was coming right then. And we realized, this is it, we're in the exact same situation. But somehow or other, the bus stopped, and we went around. Huh? We were inches away from meeting the same destiny. And then we were in Vrindavan, and because I have sore foot, I could not walk so much. So we were in a rickshaw. And we're in the rickshaw, and the rickshaw is driving, and all of a sudden the rickshaw crashes into someone, and I flew off the rickshaw. I literally flew off. And as I was flying on the road, there was a truck coming right there. And I just rolled off the road and was less than inches away from being run over, which was almost the exact same situation again. So when I got up, I began to smile. I was thinking, ah, Krishna, you are obviously trying to put some point across to me today. That death could come to any of us at any moment, whoever we are, however learned, wealthy, death could come at any moment, even however young we are. Maharaj Yudhisthira declared that the greatest thing that he has seen in the whole world is that nobody thinks that they're going to die, although everyone around them is dying. Now Krishna says, one who remembers me at the time of death will attain me. Factually, he is the only one that can save us at the time of death. We cannot turn to our bank balance. We cannot turn to our physical strength. We cannot turn to our good intelligence. We cannot turn to our family members or our friends or our business associates. We cannot turn to the army or the prime minister. The only one that can save you at the time of death is Krishna. And if we call out his name, he will be there to save us. He proved this in the incident of Draupadi. That anyone who chants his name with sincere feeling, he will reveal himself exactly according to the quality of that feeling. So therefore, the prime duty and goal of this human form of life is to learn how to approach God with sincere feeling, with sincere devotion, with intense longing, with the realization that we are completely dependent on His mercy alone. We are chanting mantras so many times a day, but actually all these mantras that we are chanting are simply preparing our consciousness so that we can chant one time, Hey Krishna, Hey Govinda, in this mood of complete helplessness, like a baby is crying for its mother. The baby knows no one else except the mother that could protect it. And when the baby cries, it's full of intensity and longing for the shelter of the mother. So the Lord teaches us through the lives of such great devotees. And sometimes by His mercy, He puts us in difficult situations to facilitate the opportunity by which we can learn to perfect our life by learning the proper method of chanting His holy names. In this way, this most beautiful pastime illustrates the very essence of how to achieve the goal of life. It is not simply a story. It is not simply history. It is history, but it is the divine Leela of the Lord, which was produced and directed by Krishna just to show you what is the goal of life and how to achieve it. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
there any questions? Yes.
When we see Mahabharata, the interest is created in the mind of Lakshmana that Draupadi is responsible for the deception which Duryodhana has taken. She is responsible herself because she has insulted, because this is the way it has been put up in Mahabharata. And there is little confusion is there. That she has insulted Karma, as you have said already, and she has also insulted Duryodhana by telling him that you are son of a blind man and you are also a blind. So these are the two causes, and even Dhritarashtra, even Yudhishthira has warned that you have, by calling in Duryodhana like this, you are going to invite great trouble for yourself. So the way you have put up is a different way.
First of all, you have to understand that Draupadi was born of fire, so she had a fiery temperament. But she was speaking only due to the previous injustices that were done to herself and her husbands. In other words, that was not the cause. That was an effect. Duryodhana was trying to kill Bhima and the Pandavas from the time they were little children. Huh? Duryodhana was envious and hateful toward the Pandavas and wanted to rid with them from the face of the earth from the time he was a little child, which was years and years and years before they ever even met Draupadi, before Draupadi was even born. Is that not true? When Duryodhana fed Bhima the poison, Draupadi was not even born. Huh? When Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana built the house at Varnataka out of lack, invited the Pandavas there with the plan of burning them to death. They were not even married to Draupadi yet at that time. The fact is, Duryodhana was envious of the Pandavas because he wanted to exploit the resources of the kingdom for himself. And he knew that the Pandavas were more qualified, and it was their right to have it. He was envious because he was attached to sense gratification and false pride. Because of years and years and years and years and years of unfair treatment, persecution, and horrible insults toward her husbands, what do you expect Draupadi to say about such a man? Huh? If someone comes to your wife and tells all kinds of horrible lies and blasphemies about you, what do you think she's going to say? She's going to probably say something bad about that person. Huh? It's the duty of a woman to protect her husband. So Draupadi was speaking in this way simply as a reaction, as a natural feminine reaction to the injustices upon her husbands, who were more dear to her than her very life. There was no fault in Draupadi. Yes.
You said that the devotee has been given a type of a harassment or a difficulties by Krishna himself so that he can be more and more surrendered to him. And more and more he can spiritually advance by seeing that there is no other way except to surrender him. But sometimes it so happens that devotee is given that type of a harassment or a difficulty which is not capable to absorb it. In that circumstances, it finds it somewhat difficult to have a faith from Krishna because it is completely overburdened beyond the capacity. That time, what should be done?
Do you not think that Draupadi was put in a situation beyond her capacity? Huh? What you should do in that situation is you should throw your hands in the air and cry out, "Hey Krishna, hey Govinda." Krishna never puts you in a situation that is beyond your ability to solve the problem by taking shelter of him. It is true, it will be beyond your capacity. But it is never beyond Krishna's capacity. Huh? So Krishna is giving you an enlightenment that you can do nothing in this situation except cry out for Krishna to save you. Hmm? Is any situation beyond Krishna's capacity? Huh? If you cry out for Krishna in helpless surrender, totally knowing that you're completely depending on his mercy, is it not his promise that he will save you? So what situation is beyond your capacity? It is only our unwillingness to surrender to Krishna that limits us and keeps us bound to the problems of this world. But it says that Krishna, who is in your heart, he knows the extent of your spiritual consciousness, and he will never test you beyond what you can endure to pass that test. He may test you far, far beyond what you would like to do to pass that test. Huh? But he never tests you beyond what you can do to pass that test. Yes.
Why people give up spiritual life?
Because they are insincere. That is the only reason. Because they are insincere. If they are sincere, Krishna will preserve what they have and carry what they lack. If they are sincere, they will have faith in Krishna and continue forward under any circumstance. If they are insincere, Bhogaiswarya prasakta namthaya pratita chetasam yavashayatmaka budhir samadho nivadiyate. Krishna says, one who is too much attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, the resolute determination for devotional service cannot take place. So if we are insincere, we remain attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence. And then this resolute determination does not take place in our heart. And then when we are tested, we find so many other alternatives other than taking shelter of God.
Otherwise, there is no reaction or no noticeable change in
Let us take the example of the Pandavas. They were in this mood factually always, but for 14 years there was no tangible results to their surrender. But in the end there was. Or let us take, for example, Prahlad Maharaj. He was crying out for Krishna with pure devotion in a helpless state time and time again, and yet the persecutions kept coming, day after day after day, week after week after week, month after month after month. His situation did not change. But in the end, Lord Narahari appeared to protect him. So therefore, a devotee has faith that in the end, Krishna will deliver him. But in the process, Krishna has his way of protecting us. Sometimes to keep us in a dangerous condition, sometimes to keep us in a miserable condition for some time is the best way for him to protect us. Yes.
What kind of deliverance?
He should have complete expectation.
And that is selfishness.
No. That is faith. Faith in the mercy of God. He has complete faith that if he is loyal to Krishna and his Guru Maharaj, that Krishna will never abandon him. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami masacha. Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall protect you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Krishna is telling us, he will protect you. Do not fear. How he will protect you? When he will protect you, do not fear, he will do it. If you surrender. All you have to be concerned with is whether I am surrendering. If you are surrendering, you know 100% Krishna will protect you. How he protects you, he knows best, not me. That is faith. Our business is not to try to figure out how Krishna is going to protect us and when. That's Krishna's business. Our business is just to surrender, knowing that he knows what's best. That is the meaning of surrender, to have that faith. When Prahlad was falling from the cliff, he didn't know how Krishna was going to save him or when. He was simply surrendering. And Krishna came and saved him. He didn't know that Lord Nrsingadeva was going to come. He was just surrendering. And when Lord Nrsingadeva did come, he was saying, I'm not a businessman. I'm only surrendering. How you want to protect me, that's for you to decide. That's none of my business. But I know you will, because that is your promise. You tell me not to fear in Bhagavad Gita that you will protect me, so I will not fear. I know you will protect me. My only concern is that I am surrendering. Does that answer your question? Yes.
Maharaj, the devotee of the Lord is compassionate, tolerant, and merciful. And Draupadi, being a devotee of the Lord, why was she not compassionate on evil-minded Duryodhana?
She was compassionate.
Inserting him?
Yes. She was trying to give him a chance to realize the offenses he was committing and stop them, because she knew that if he continued, he would be ruined. If someone's doing all heinous activities and you say, oh, you are very nice, is that compassionate? That means you're further encouraging him. She was doing everything within her power to stop him from his atrocities, which was meant for his own ruination. Her insults to him were an act of compassion. Huh? She was doing her level best to give him an understanding that he was wrong. Krishna also insulted Duryodhana many times, trying to make him understand that he was wrong. But he wouldn't even listen to Krishna, what to speak of Draupadi. How can you say Arjuna was only a great archer? He happened to be Krishna's best friend. But Arjuna had even a more intimate friendship with Krishna than Yudhisthira. But it calculated in terms of devotion. Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender. Krishna calculates on the basis of devotion, not religiosity. They were both of the most exalted quality of devotees, but Arjuna was the most special amongst the Pandavas because of his very deep attachment and friendship to Krishna, which is bhakti. He had, but not. He did not have the same devotional relationship with Krishna as Arjuna. Is there any other questions? So we thank you very much. Hare Krishna.